The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Mother's Day to everyone involved. Today I'd like to share some reflections on a teaching that's been very important to me, has made a big difference in my life, and it's the topic of views. Views and the teachings have a very negative rendition. In all the discourses, views are not rendered as positive things. So they are qualified. The views that we work on are things called right views or purification of views. And this is particularly wonderful to me because, I think that this practice is about meeting all the needs, the deepest needs that a human person can have. And coming into contact with what we need the most and being able to have relationships, internal and external, that help us settle, open up, and come up to the fullness of our being, fullness of here, fullness of being together. And so views are usually found in kind of the classic teaching of something called sila, samadhi, and panya. Words, these are Pali words that can be translated to ethical conduct. Samadhi can be concentration or meditation. And panya is wisdom. And views are usually in the category of wisdom because views can be the beginning and the end of the path. That's one of the potent things about them. We start working on our views, start relating to our views, and branching out widely, releasing views, lessening views, finding views that are helpful. And then this amazing thing begins to happen that without views, then there's just this viewing, this seeing, this knowing. And this knowing that I'm talking about, the knowing that we develop, the knowledge and vision of this tradition, is very gentle. It's about, Gill says something like, be still and look at everything, and gaze at everything kindly. Gazing at everything kindly. And the kindly part is really important. Because the kindly part is where the settling has happened. In order to be able to look at views, so first there's sila and ethical virtue. And what we get from practicing with our ethical conduct is we find some safety. We find where our need for safety is met and our need for non-harming is also met. And then that allows us to settle down and really start relaxing some of the deeper things inside of us that are a little fragmented. We kind of lead fragmented lives, mostly. We're usually coming and going in our minds, usually coming and going in the world. It's part of the worldly life to come and go, to reach, to push, to want, to not want. And so samadhi is of coming together. It's a centering. It's a not being out there, not being then and there. And once we find that we have this foothold, this place of rest, this place, we can begin to take note of our view, what we see more easily, and we begin to notice those views that are lead us to wholesomeness, to the goodness, what leads to compassion, what leads to joy, authentic joy. And there are different views. The word views in Pali, which is ditti, can mean pretty much the same thing that it does in English. It can mean the view, the opinion, the belief, the metaphysics, the history, the stories, all these things that we've inherited, that we brought along. And views can also means in Pali, shares the meaning of being at a view, a beautiful vista, the top of a mountain, at the edge of a cliff. And then it has a very interesting view that's in Pali that we don't have in English, and that is here and now. Being here and now. And that's what we get to. We get to this place where we're here and now with this tremendous clarity. This tremendous clarity that can see here and now in a way that's normally not available because there's so many filters that we live with, that we need, in fact. So it's a lot about removing the filters. And we start to do this by settling down, by doing what we just did. We meditated. We were quiet. And then we can begin to notice all the things that also come up. And it's very different than when we are able to just kind of be there fully. Let's say that you were standing in line over there in the bathroom and there's a long line and you want to get back here to the meditation to be on time. And so there's a little concern, there's a little worry, there's a little preoccupation, there's a little back and forth going on in you. It's also possible to, maybe you heard some teaching about being quiet and receiving the moment and being massaged by the present moment and receiving the goodness that's here. And you decide to be still while you're waiting for the bathroom. Just still, taking in your feet on the ground, the body shifting, the space, people coming and going, the sunlight. Those are a whole bunch of other things than the concern to get to the bathroom, to get back, to sit here and be on time. And so that's the fullness that I'm alluding to. The moment gets like thicker in a way as we begin to quiet down and release our views, our thinking. And there are different views, some that really hold us back. Fearful views, long habits, long ideas that we picked up from somewhere, some flashbacks and stories. And so these begin to settle. And what we do is we can begin to take care of something that's a little deeper inside. We can begin to take care of, well, maybe that view is not really necessary. We can kind of begin to put a question mark on views. And we come back to the present moment, and then we can take another look at that view, and slowly that can begin to see that that doesn't really help us. And so there's this kind of massage that goes back and forth. It's very organic. We can sense the effect that it has on us to go back to that same concern, that same preoccupation. And begin to sense what it does, physically, emotionally. And then we begin to see that, well, maybe I don't need to see it this way. Maybe I can begin to question it a little bit differently. And this helps a lot because it leads us onward. It leads us onward to go a little deeper into what is going on here with how we frame things, how we see things, how we exist here. It's been very, very important for me to let go of views, very intense views, through a lot of work, because I have found myself more belonging to the world. We all have this deep need to belong, to be at home. We see the Buddha statue pointing to the earth on the night of his enlightenment. He was pointing to the earth because the earth was his witness. He belonged to the earth. He is of the earth. There was no separation. Nothing could take him away from his connection to here, the fullness of here. And then there's the stability also in his gaze. There's a kind of a kindness in his gaze. There is a sweetness that comes, and we cultivate it with our practice, like we did just now. And so we do this, and the more we do this, the more we can accept things and see things. So many of us maybe have looked at emotions. Here, one of the many teachings that we do in secular mindfulness and in our insight tradition is we look at emotions, and we look at emotions as phenomena, as events. And it's very, very helpful to look at an emotion as an event, as opposed to how we usually feel emotions, our emotions, mirror emotions, become the emotions. There's something very different as if we learn to step back a little bit and sense it, understand it from a sensory point of view. And that's a very, very big place that begins to open up. That's why being with emotions is such a potent practice. It's this huge place because when we can look at our emotions that way, when we can treat our emotions that way, we find this refuge inside. There's this space that opens up, and suddenly the emotion can be understood better. And it's not about doing anything to the emotion, and it's not about trying to fix it, which is really hard, right? Because it would be really nice to just stop certain emotions like fear, anger, shame. Sometimes there can be even too much joy that can be inappropriate. And so we don't really change them, but we can see them, know them, sense them, care for them, kindly attend to them, kindly attend to them, kindly let them be, so that in that space that opens up, these things can get untangled. And what gets untangled is not necessarily something we do. That's one of the wonderful things about a mindfulness. It gets untangled by something called insight. We begin to see and sense that the emotions are in this flux. First of all, we see that they are us. They are in something we know. They're an experience that's happening, and that we can know them. So it's something very cool that our mind does. We can know something, and we can let the something be. And when that space opens up, which we do with emotions all the time, when that space opens up, then this untangling can begin to happen. If we can be steady, if we can be caring, if we can really just be there, not fragmented, not pushing away, but actually find some sort of center, some sort of foothold, some sort of nurturing or kindliness. If you can be kindly to some of those horrible emotions that come from life, if you can be kind to them, they unravel. There's this unraveling that happens. And it unravels because these things want to be felt and seen, because there's a lot in them that has a lot of little sticky parts that we keep us attached. That fear, it's like we almost can't even see that we are not the fear sometimes. We almost can't even see that we're not the shame sometimes. But if we bring this caring, nurturing stance that our tradition teaches us, this is a tradition of tranquility and serenity, as well as insight. If we bring this tranquility and serenity to this stuff, these real knots of ours, they begin to kind of slowly unravel, because they're physical things. They're emotional things. They're motivational things. They're cognitive things. And we get insight into, oh, wow, when this happens, this happens. Wow, when that comes into my vision, this happens. When that comes into my mind, I do this. When I feel this way, then I really go down that rabbit hole. Wow. And it's cool how this happens. It happens because you see, things are not solid. That's one of the big problems of views, or one of the big interesting revelations of having right view, or having a purified view. A purified view means that we can see the emotion, see the object, and we can know we're seeing the object, and that they're two different things. And when we can see these two different things, we then begin to see that we have this overlay of concepts and how we see the emotion, how we see my anger, how I see my anger. I begin to see how I see my anger. And then I can know that, and I can take that stock and kindly receive it. And one other thing I see is that this is changing. How I'm looking at it changes. And the thing, the anger, is also changing. And so suddenly things are not so fixed. We're in this kind of stream, moving, flowing world. And that's amazing, because it's like we're more here. We're more alive, and we're more intimate with ourselves. We can be more intimate with ourselves, and we can be more intimate with the world, which is very nice. Let's say that you are at the beach one day. It's an off day. It's a Sunday afternoon like today, and we're at the beach, And we just came out of meditation, so we're very relaxed. We're not yet worried about Monday. And so we just really take in the beach. We just really take in the waves. We take the foam of the waves, the air, the flowing gentle breeze, the cool breeze. And there's still maybe little birds with little bird legs. And we're just really taking all these things in. We can really just, if we're settled and just there in some sort of joy, enjoying this. And it's very cool because you're just registering these things. And you're just registering, it's like a marvel. You're not really thinking about these things. That's a different thing. Someone asks you, did you see that wave? Did you see those waves? Oh yeah, those were great waves. But it wasn't because you were analyzing the waves. You could be analyzing the waves. But then that keeps you in a different little frame as opposed to a very, very broad frame where you're just registering everything in every direction, which is what mindfulness does. And then at the beach, you can go into another layer. There's the building blocks of your experience are also available. And then how that comes into view is that you see that there is sand and that you're knowing sand. And what begins to show up is the quality, the essence of sand. Hardness. Wetness. Moving air. Shifting sensations. And that's a whole other deeper level of experience that is available to us. Just like in standing in line. When we were standing in line, you could have been thinking about getting to the bathroom, or you could have been really fully here, being in the moment, taking in everybody around you, and just having a different experience. One's not better than the other. It's just a different experience. And then the different experience where there could be a greater intimacy and a fullness of the moment. And that's very, very sweet because we kind of don't live that way for the most part. We kind of live in a different way. And so we are not in a certain way really fully even here at times, many times. The world of the mind is a very, very, very captivating world to be in. It's almost like a virtual reality in a certain sense. There's this little story that someone told me. My aunt, one of my aunts from where I was born, sent me this little story of just this little electronic story about a woman who was having lunch. This was in Spanish. Some woman in Latin America was at a restaurant. She went into a restaurant to have lunch. And she was busy planning her next big project at work and also planning some other things that she needed to do, her vacation. And she ordered her lunch, and then she heard this voice from like below her. It's how the story put it. Can I have a piece of bread, please? And she looked down, and there was a little boy asking for a piece of bread. And of course, she kind of felt the pang of that. And so she ordered him a piece of bread. They brought him a piece of bread, and then she kind of really wanted to get back to her world. And then the boy asked, can I have a little bit of butter to put on it, please? And so she offered him the butter, and then he asked her, what are you doing? And she said, I'm sending emails. And he asked, what's that? And she knew that he would not understand. The boy was a desperately poor boy. In Latin America, you see this everywhere, where I come from and where I work and where I live a lot. And so this boy said, what's email? And so she was trying to explain to him, and she couldn't figure it out, how to explain it to him. And then she said, you know, it's like virtual reality. It's like a virtual reality that doesn't really exist, where it's like letters and notes, but it's more like a virtual reality. And then she explained, and then he said, oh, I know what virtual reality is. Virtual reality, I live in virtual reality too. I live in the idea that it's going to be Christmas today, and that we're going to have gifts and presents. Because where I live, my mom goes to work every day, and my sister goes to sell her body, but she comes back with her body every night. My father is in jail, and my little baby brother's crying from hunger. And so I live in this virtual reality too. And the woman kind of came to and came to see and to sense how she was missing the world by going back into her world of vacations. And in her memories, she was remembering suddenly a vacation she had in Italy or something. And she was missing the world. She was in the world, but missing the world and not being able to have compassion for the world that she lived in. So it's a very different experience to live in a world where it's a virtual reality. We're not receiving all that's here. We're not unwinding all that could be unwound and open up the heart to what the heart can open up. We're not knowing the spaces of the heart. This is a path. There's this great book by Goldstein, this little cute little yellow book, A Path Full of Heart. It's the prettiest little book. It's very short, but it's a path full of heart. This is a path full of heart. And the way to release all the cravings, classical word, clinging that we have, the thirsts that we have, the wantings, the unquenchable wantings, and then the fears and the shames and the flashbacks. The way to unwind these things is to, when it's time to do this practice, to remember that there can be two things, very simple, at all time. There is this glass, and I know that I'm knowing this glass. And just in the time that I told you that I wasn't really thinking of the glass looks like it's here, right? But there was all this, there's all this shifting and changing at every moment with this glass. There's the glass, I could bring it up and have water. I call it a glass, but we could put flowers in it, and then it's something else. So it's a convention that I'm overlaying on it. So I can be very rigid. This is my glass. Nobody use my glass for flowers. That's rude. Or just know that this is shifting. And I'm thinking about the glass, but I'm also thinking about you. I'm also thinking about what I'm going to say. I'm also wondering if you're getting me. All this stuff is going on. There's all this shifting and moving happening in just this class. And when I enter into the world of just what I know and what's being known, the sensory experience is completely changing. And so is my internal experience. My knowing of it is also shifting and changing. So there's this constant movement of arising and passing, arising and passing. It's not constant. And that's very, very relaxing for those things that are not easy to change in us. That really softens things up because it gets really hard in there sometimes, in that heart mind. We're really locked. No, this is not true. This is how this is. You don't know, but this is how this is. But is it? So what I'm talking about is what's referred to in the tradition as the beginning of vipassana, beginning of insight. When we are in that flowing world, when we are beginning to sense and know and see and feel and touch and experience and look kindly at how much flux and flow is happening, then we have insight. Vipassana, the V, they tell me, means you're really seeing. You're really seeing. We're really seeing through. And it's very nice to really see through in this world, to connect deeply to this world, to connect deeply to the people around us. And equally important, maybe as much, to connect to ourselves really deeply, to really find ourselves where there's a rub, where there's a stuckness, where there's a repetition that just won't stop, that keeps holding me back. It's really nice to find that, oh, that's that. And then to be kind toward that, to care for that, to let it be nourished by the calm that's available. There's a lot more benevolence here than we usually avail ourselves of. And so we open up broadly to this goodness. We can. And then it's a new world. It's the same world, it's this world. But it's very, very broad. It's very, very full. It's very, very free of the concepts that I've overlaid. Today being Mother's Day, I was reflecting about being with my mother a couple of weeks ago. And it was just kind of amazing how I can be with her now, because I can see this person, my mother, but I can also let her be a person. Let her be her, whatever she is. And that's just an amazing reality to me now. My mom and I, like many mothers, have had a very difficult past. I'm a queer man, and she's a Latin American woman, very patrician upbringing, very patriarchal upbringing. I grew up in a Latin country, and so the stance was, no, you're gay? No. We're going to beat that out of you. So my uncles tried to beat it out of me. And then my mom just refused to accept me, and I had a stepfather who also was kind of pushing me out of the house, so I kind of left the house pretty early and led a semi-homeless life at a very young age. Because that's just how it was for everybody. It was a different era. The country was in a different place. The world was in a different place around the issues of being gay, being queer. Yeah, that identity was really not what it is today. And so for years, I would just hang up on my mom, because then when we started to talk again, she would ask every time was, when are you going to get married? When are you going to get married? When are you going to get married? So I would just have to hang up. Like, for like 10 years, like, I would just hang up. I would keep calling her, because she's my mother. I'm Latin, so we come from a big Latin family that I was not connected to when I was a teenager, because we didn't have all these nice apps, but I'm very connected to, because they raised me. So this is, all of this has happened. So there's been eons of forgivenesses and moving through and letting go of views and anger and resentment. So it's a long process, having insight into what is. But it's a magical thing, really. I was with this woman. I was telling Gil about this. I made a joke. I don't know if Gil liked it, but I said, Gil, I think I'm an arhat. He did not laugh. we take the term arhat, which is an awakened being in our tradition, kind of seriously. But then I said to him, you know how they say, Gil, that that when you are... when you think you're really enlightened, to go spend a weekend with your parents. So Gil, I just did that. I just spent 3 days in my mother's house, staying in her house, which I didn't stay in for 20 years. I was in her house, and we had a great time, because now I see what arises in me. I am responsible for what arises in me. The young Francisco that comes up around my mother when she talks that way, that's in me. But it's my ability now to view this, to see that this is coming. This old Francisco, these young Franciscos are coming up. They're coming up. And I can see them. I can see them. And I can kindly see them. And they settle. It settles. And this is my internal work. And then I let my mom be herself. She does things. And she's not my mom only. She's also just a person there who's getting old now. And I can have compassion for my mom in a way that I never thought I could. And we relate in a way that I never thought was ever going to happen in this lifetime. And that's a beautiful thing in this very life, to be healed with my mother after a pretty checkered past. And my checkered past, our difficult times are no different than anybody else's. That's what, another one of the great liberating insights, that the pain that I had with my mom, the difficulty being semi-homeless as a teenager for 4 years, that's my story, and you have your story, and it's relative. Mine is not worse than yours. I came to this insight, again another view, via physical pain. I had an accident, and then a rare degenerative disease, and then a big reconstruction of my spine. And then I was rendered disabled, like I didn't walk for 4 years, and with severe symptoms that I still manage, but you can see that I hide them pretty well, or I manage them pretty well. And then I realized one day, I thought, this is so terrible. I was a young person when it happened, and I was homebound. I couldn't work. And so for a long time, I pitied myself. And it was a big change when I realized, oh, I remember now when a cold was a big deal. So I realized pain is relative. So everybody else's pain is like their pain, and it's serious to their relative experience. It's unique to them. Mine is not worse than anybody else's. that insight was very helpful, because then I just was a lot more relaxed and accepting and at ease with a very difficult reality that's taken a lot of care and attention and medical care to handle. But views are very liberating. The right to view, the purified view, can be very, very liberating. So now I don't want you to manufacture anything. I talked about emotions a lot, so that you could see that that you already, those of you who know mindfulness of emotions, already know what I'm talking about. This, hopefully. And if not, maybe our previous, if you're new to the practice, you can see through, you maybe had an experience in our meditation of being with something and letting it move, caring for it, being kind toward it, being present, being at ease with it, giving it space and attention, letting it move along. Everything is kind of in this flux. So if anything, I could invite you to maybe consider your relationship to the present moment, to how things are, how things come and go. And enter the present moment with into as much fullness as is available. That's what can come by paying attention to your relationship to how to do one thing at a time. What is your relationship to just doing one thing at a time? What unveils itself? There's much that can be unveiled. So, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers. Happy Mother's Day to everyone's mother. And may you go in peace and have a great day. Maybe enjoy a good lunch mindfully, taking your time with the food. Even there, automatic patterns can be seen and not be automatic. Maybe just going a little bit slower with somebody, you can be with them there even more than usual. Lunchtime is going to come up. And I was told that Gil has been giving questions to at the end of talks to see if people wanted to have like a little in-person breakout group outside. And so what did I say? Okay. Nope, that's not where it is. Oh yeah, that's where it is. So what does it mean to do one thing at a time to you? Or what could it mean to do one thing at a time to you? So I think that if you choose to go out and outside in the courtyard and mingle a little bit, and if you want to have a Dharma discussion, what does it mean to just settle on one thing at a time to you? Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you, Francisco.